Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, Brian, Gina and I getting some hot round table talk, and then we roll right into the Rotten Tomatoes game, and then the news in the first half. First, I'll tell you about Tru Niagen. I've been taking Tru Niagen for about 5 months now, and I feel great. It's we get older, our bodies experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects our health and the cells of your body. When your cells are affected, your body's affected. Lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on the immune system, overeating, also deplete NAD because cells expend more energy to function. Backed by Nobel Prize winning scientists and clinicians, and research, global research, regulatory approvals, this stuff is the real deal. I've been on it for a number of months. Dr. Drew's been on it for a couple of years now. Support cellular energy and defense. Visit Tru Niagen. That's TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month supply through July 31st.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Ed Calderone. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, if LAUSD shut down for a year when he was a kid, he still would have done about the same. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but getting on. The mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing this show with a friend. I can see it in the ratings when you do. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Let's play some games.
Yeah, well, we got Rotten Tomatoes to play. I had a thought moments before the mic heated up. I like to keep my little notepad with me, my piles of papers like a crazy nutty professor, although I ran out of my house and I left them at home, but I have my backup notebook with some notes I've jotted down. Ed Calderone is going to talk to him in the second half of the show. We're going to get to that massacre in Mexico. 27 people massacred, flew right under the radar here as far as the news cycle.
Are we talking about the rehab center?
Yeah.
Yeah. We touched on it, but we don't have any answers.
We touched on it, but he's going to kind of tell us how that worked. And I think the hint is folks who live here make the pilgrimage over to Mexico and do the dirty work and then come back here. But we'll talk to him. So, comforting. Edward James Olmos and that whole mafia story that I was talking to about with Danny Trejo and the movie he made and all that kind of stuff. He'll have some thoughts about that. But first, a thought as I was just talking to Dr. Drew, who was in here a bit earlier. And Dr. Drew is always kind of a ball of nerves and pins and needles and anxieties. He's a normally anxious guy, and he's just always been that guy. And it's some of it is him being sensitive, and the other half is just a neuroses. But
his resting terror face.
Yeah, his resting terror face. But here was a thought that ran through my brain the second the mics heated up, which was, What is this big difference between the folks that are in their early 60s and mid 50s and they sort of friends, what I would kind of consider friends' parents when I was a kid versus all that's going on now? And when I was young and one of my parents, one of my friend's parents, it was just a guy smoking and a cardigan and whatever shit we were into, like whatever music we were into or whatever fad was going on. Now, back then, it was something mechanical. It was like clickety-clacks or some game, you know, don't break the ice or don't spill the beans or, you know, some sizzler hot car, Hot Wheel set or something. It was something like sort of physical. But maybe there was a thing that kids or us or as young people or culturally we were into, but the guy in the cardigan with the cigarette didn't give two shits what we were into. It was none of his business. And it was considered just sort of
folly.
Folly. It's exactly what it was. Like, all right, when you guys are ready to grow out of this chicken shit and join us in the adult world, I'll be waiting for you with your first cardigan, beer, and pack of Lucky Strikes. Like, and so that's what it was. And as far as whatever music you were listening to, that was more just chump change. Just, you idiots listening to dumb stuff. You should be listening to Perry Como or whoever I'm listening to. And thus, there wasn't an anxiety because there wasn't them trying to fit in. They weren't trying to appear young. They were old. They knew it.
They earned it.
Yeah, your job was to come up to be old like me, not for me to dumb it down so I could hang out with you. And there wasn't really any new technology or anything that you had to be, you had to keep up with or be aware of or laughed at when you pronounced it, you know, the wrong way. Like I sent it an email out to a few of the notable comedians I know saying, hey, we're working on this Mad TV documentary and we're working on this doc, this meme doc, Docs About Memes. And like Leno like called me and he was like, I don't really know what a meme is. Like, I can't even have anything to contribute because I work on cars, you know, like I don't know what that is. And there has always been a generational gap, but the difference is Drew feels very obligated to be plugged into what his young daughter is doing and what they're up to. And by the way, minding his P's and Q's to use the right words and the right labels for the ever changing vocabulary. Like when I said transsexuals, like a transgender, like, oh, I thought it was trans. Oh, no, no, old man. Come on now. Come on, old man. You got to join us now. And there's like, you see politicians, you know, Joe Biden's trying to keep up as fast as he can keep up with. Is it Latinx, Latinr? Like,
well, yes, as it pertains to Joe Biden, the thing that occurred to me is a lot of a contributing factor, not the main factor, but a contributing like erosion is like you have the Joe Bidens of the world or the Iron Sheik of the world or George Takei, like people who are of advanced age and really have like shouldn't know about this stuff, shouldn't be social media superstars, but to have people running their social media so as to appear younger and more with it and more and their opinions clearly are reflecting a younger sensibility. And I don't know, I can't speak for George Takei, for example, but like, I know for a fact that like people run like the Iron Sheik, you know, his social media, and thus he appears cool and very of the moment when in fact, the fucking guy has no idea how to work a phone.
But it's working on me because I'm writing him in this year during the election. I don't know what his Christian name is, but I'm just going to write Iron Sheik. I think people get the idea.
Sheik, comma, the iron.
Right. So this thing that old guys need to stay tuned in and by the way, up to date, like as if, you know, Drew has a medical practice and Drew has to kind of keep informed on new medications and new procedures and new things. Otherwise, he's going to be the antiquated doctor or he's not going to do his job. There's a social environment. There's a social version of that. And I think it's causing anxiety with folks like Drew who feel like they don't want to get left out or left behind or sort of pushed aside. Like, hey, we're moving on and we're moving on without you because it's all about young and hip and free and cool. And you better be hip. You better be able to name all of the Kardashians. Otherwise, you're out of it, Pops.
Yep.
Versus when I was a kid and, you know, it's kind of curious, like, you know, I don't know, when I'm 56, when Frank Sinatra was 56, I was probably 13. I didn't think of it as his job to come down and learn my language.
Right.
I look at it as that's the fucking chairman of the board. I should start memorizing some of his songs. I didn't look at it as me come to him or him come to me. Or, you know, Johnny Carson was, you know, 70 years old and doing monologues when I was 23. And I didn't look at it as my job for him to learn. You got to learn. You got to hear my words. You got to listen to me. You need to hear my
voice. Step into my truth.
Right. And so I think what's going on is guys like Drew and many others are having anxiety because instead of the old way, which is I'm the old man, I'm the boss, you guys, if you work hard, keep your nose clean, one day you can drive my car and live in my house. You can be up, you can scratch and claw your way, aspire to be me. Mm-hmm. Now I'm aspiring to be you, which is now causing anxiety because it's hard to aspire to be someone who's 23 when you're 63, especially when the aspirations stop because you have so much more money, so much more experience, so much more life experience, so much more training, but they're still like, I don't want to get shunned by a 22-year-old.
Right. And boy, that means the young folk really have it all because you're aspiring to be the person that you pay for. Like, what's in it for you?
And it's also like, you're not aspiring to be the 23-year-old version of yourself because the 23-year-old version of yourself is a broke mess piece of shit. You're aspiring to be the 23-year-old version of them.
Right.
And maybe this dovetails nicely, but Barry Weiss, the female, just resigned today from the New York Times because she was an op-ed and a contributor and stuff. And she was like, basically, I can't keep up with the kids. I'm out.
Twitter's running the op-ed page.
Right.
Or Twitter's editing the New York Times, whatever she said.
Yeah. First off, how fucking unlucky for us that we happen to be alive during a time out of all the time in history where old people are now bad. Like anyone over 35 is considered out of it and an idiot. And or by the way, just racist.
Yeah.
Gina, you're still good.
Yeah.
Oh, Gina, thank Christ.
Yeah.
Whew, got 10 more years.
So this notion that everybody is old is bad, and now somehow we should be listening to the lunatics who've taken over the asylum. You have highlights from her resignation letter. Sorry, how old is she, by the way? I never figure that one out. Well, she's been there. She knows it.
She seems seasoned.
At 36.
Oh, she's not.
Oh,
she's not
wow.
that old. But I guess old compared to 24. All right. What'd she say?
It is with sadness that I write to tell you that I am resigning from the New York Times. I joined the paper with gratitude and optimism 3 years ago. I was hired with the goal of bringing in voices that would not otherwise appear in your pages. First-time writers, centrists, conservatives, and others who would not naturally think of the Times as their home. The reason for this effort was clear. The paper's failure to anticipate the outcome of the 2016 election meant that it didn't have a firm grasp of the country it covers. The priority, in opinion, was to help redress that critical shortcoming. Twitter is not on the masthead of the New York Times, but Twitter has become its ultimate editor. As ethics and mores of that platform have become those of the paper itself has increasingly become a kind of performance space. Stories are chosen and told in a way to satisfy the narrowest of audiences, rather than to allow a curious public to read about the world and then draw their own conclusions. My forays into wrongthink have made me the subject of constant bullying by colleagues who disagree with my views. They have called me a Nazi and a racist. Several colleagues perceived to be friendly with me were badgered by coworkers. My work and my character are openly demeaned on company-wide Slack channels where masthead editors regularly weigh in. There, some co-workers insist I need to be rooted out if this company is to be truly an inclusive one. What rules that remain at the Times are applied with extreme selectivity. If a person's ideology is in keeping with the new orthodoxy, they and their work remain unscrutinized. Everyone else lives in fear of the digital Thunderdome. Online venom is excused, so long as it is directed at the proper targets. Nowadays, standing up for your principle at the paper does not win plaudits. It puts a target on your back. Too wise to post on Slack, they write to me privately about the new McCarthyism that has taken root at the paper of record. All this bodes ill, especially for independent-minded young writers and editors paying close attention to what they'll have to do in advance to advance their careers. Rule 1. Speak your mind at your own peril. Rule 2. Never risk commissioning a story that goes against the narrative. Rule 3. Never believe an editor or publisher who urges you to go against the grain. None of this means that some of the most talented journalists in the world don't still labor for this newspaper. They do, which is what makes the illiberal environment especially heartbreaking. I will be, as ever, a dedicated reader of their work, but I can no longer do the work that you brought me here to do, the work that Adolf Oakes described in that famous 1896 statement, to make of the columns of the New York Times a forum for the consideration of all questions of public importance, and to that end, to invite intelligent discussion from all shades of opinion. Oakes's idea is one of the best I've encountered, and I've always comforted myself with the notion that the best ideas win out. But ideas cannot win on their own. They need a voice. They need a hearing. Above all, they must be backed by people willing to live by them. Sincerely, Barry Weiss.
Wow. So she's gone. And that's where we're at. Look, I told you guys this whole young demo, fucking kids are the future, get out of the way thing. That was sort of counting on them being the future and us getting out of the way and them not being colossal snot-nosed douchebags, which they've all turned into. We thought they were going to lead the way and lead by example. We had this sort of naive thought that, oh, the young people, they know what's going on. They're hip. Mm-hmm. They're now. And they're going to lead. And they're going to lead in a way like a Kardashian in a Pepsi commercial. They're going to walk up to that National Guardsman and hand him a Pepsi. And they're going to make everything. We didn't know they'd be little fucking egotistical little snots. We didn't know what piles of egotistical shit they were all going to be. We should have known because they were told they were the greatest the entire time, but we didn't know what piles of shit they were going to be. And we didn't know how scary and vindictive they were going to be either. We thought they were just going to lead the way, not like stare into the rearview mirror and try to get everyone canceled and wished into the cornfield. So now
you're supposed to be drunk on Zima, not drunk with power.
Right.
But, you know, I pulled a just to support that point. I don't know if you saw it. Patton Oswalt talks about this and he calls it trailblazer irony.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a whole bit about it for RuPaul, which is phenomenal. But someone posted this at Grammatic on Twitter about trailblazer irony in terms of comedians. Mm-hmm. And it's like 30 seconds. I thought you might want to see it. And this one, sure. He talks about Joan Rivers.
Sometimes your bravery helps bring about a world that ironically you don't belong in anymore.
Ooh.
And it's such a weird. I mean, I feel like that's what happened to Joan Rivers at the end of her career. She broke so many goddamn barriers for women and for talking about certain subject matter. And then at the end of her career, she suddenly saw all of her stuff get parsed by this new generation. That's like this generation that's attacking her and parsing her stuff. You're enjoying the freedoms you're enjoying partially because of the shit that she did. She laid down barbed wire so you could run across it and then point at her for not using the correct language. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it can go no other way.
It's interesting. I had a thought as it pertained to Barry Weiss and Twitter, and Patton kind of crystallized it, which is back in the day, or there was a for time immemorial, like in order to get a platform, you had to ascend to a certain level through a body of work or some great accomplishment. You got to a platform. Now, by virtue of Twitter, which ironically meant to give everyone a voice. Everyone's got this platform now, and granted, it takes a few thousand people to get the voice of to get someone canceled or get someone an op-ed removed or whatever. But now everyone's got that platform, but they haven't earned it. You know what I mean? Like they just all of a sudden are like, oh my gosh, I've got a platform. I can publish something, and the world can see it.
Yeah, you used to have to earn your bullhorn. Now everyone is assigned a bullhorn on their 13th birthday, and it's deafening. And it's and also there's a kind of a problem. There's a problem when you're in the op-ed business, or you're in the poetry business, or you're in the joke writing business. If you're in the op-ed business, the joke writing business, the poetry business, the songwriting business, but let's just go back to joke writing. Like, imagine if Norman Lear was writing All in the Family and back in 1973 or something. And then every time he wrote a page for the pilot, he just put it out there and shared it with the world. And everyone got to weigh in. You know what I mean? He called Meathead a Pollock. I find that deeply, deeply disturbing. And then they'd feed it back to Norman Lear, and then Norman Lear would write, okay, call him a dummy. Let's get rid of Pollock. Let's get rid of the people have spoken. Imagine if you're trying to create something. Now, it's not that way with news coverage, but it is that way with, Tom Cotton's op-ed on the National Guard and looters. That's you going, hey, what do you think? And them going, I don't like it. Take it back. Well, imagine if any form of art or any music composition or any jokes. Imagine if jokes work that way. Like, hey, Chris Rock is going to write a joke. All right, well, let's vet it first. Like, show us the joke. Show us the setup. Then tell us the punt. No, you're not taking that out on stage. Please, please, please. It's kind of the death of art. It's also the death of opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know if this phrase has been thrown around or not, but as you said that, I thought it's kind of a socialism, because what's the point? What's the point of aspiring to do anything if you could just be canceled? And why would you want to do anything when you can just sit around and cancel somebody else when you're 15 years old?
True. So keep your eye on this, people. And there's only one real answer, which is pushback and tell the kids to settle down. They're not always going to get their way because they're kind of drunk with power right now. We have a unprepared, speaking of comedy, from which show? Is this from Quarantine or where's
this? This is from Dallas.
This is from Dallas.
I mean, not Dallas, excuse me, Houston, sorry.
Same place.
Yeah.
And this is from Houston. What is the subject for this unprepared?
Because it's from Houston, they wanted you to talk about NASA.
NASA. All right. Here we go. Houston, yeah. NASA.
It's in the back. Well, the very back. Yeah.
NASA.
What is it?
NASA.
NASA. All right. NASA. National Aerospace Aeronautics or something like that. It's an acronym. National Aerospace. National Aeronautics and Space Association or something like that. Listen, exploration?
No.
Exploration. Listen, drunk guy eating chicken wings. Why am I going to you? Drunk guy eating chicken wings. I'm going to him for all my technical information tonight. Wait a minute. How many liters in a gallon?
7 million.
Okay. NASA. All right, I'll do NASA. Put your hand down. I'm doing NASA. As far as I can tell, Elon Musk can get us to Mars cheaper than NASA can get us to Bakersfield. My thing is just fucking privatize everything, compete, and let's just do it that way. I know everyone does this thing where they're like, well, let the government handle it. What if... Think about how great the automobile is today. I mean, think about Audi, Mercedes, Ford, kicking ass, Chevy, whatever you guys drove here, it's all 1,000 times better than cars were 20 years ago. And think about how competition is a tide that raises all boats, right? And imagine if there was no competition just in automobile manufacturing, right? I mean, imagine if there was a car just called government car. It'd be a beige Pontiac Aztec with like two Space Saver spares on it. Imagine, look at it this way. All right, let's talk Tex-Mex. You guys love tacos? All right, everyone's competing for tacos, right? You do that thing, we go, this taco truck is awesome. Have you tried this taco place? Imagine if there's a place called Government Taco. The government is now in charge of tacos. How fucking bad would that taco suck? All right, so let's just expand this thought into almost everything in life. My feeling is let Elon and all these other guys compete. Let them make a killer rocket. Let Tom Cruise go up there. And frankly, never come back. I mean, he's made 185 movies. He doesn't age. He rides a motorcycle through westerns. I'm done with Tom Cruise. I don't feel like I need to pay NASA $200 billion to do what Elon Musk can do for 15 cents. So let the crazy folks make the rockets and NASA. Look, it was great. I mean, I love all the movies where the shit is moving in slow motion and the people are walking out in slow motion. I love all those asteroid movies, but enough is enough. We've been to the moon. And this whole thing where it's like, we need to go back to the moon. I don't know. Did Frank Sinatra ever say, I need to fuck that cocktail waitress again? No. I fucked her once, that was good enough. Now I want to fuck a new cocktail waitress. The chairman of the board would never want to go back to the same pussy. And I feel the same way about the moon. We're done with the moon. Now we go to Mars. Elon will show the way. Take Tom with you and never come back. Thank you. I like that you guys applaud. That's, why would you applaud that? That's horrible.
You know, I do, as much as I'm looking forward to Top Gun and everything, I would miss Tom Hanks because I feel like he's a part of us. Tom Cruise doesn't feel like he lives in our society. He makes movies and then he leaves.
Yeah.
He returns to Earth to make a film.
Right.
Yeah, like, you know, it's like Tom Hanks is kind of ubiquitous. He's telling us to put on a mask. He's keeping us updated on COVID-19. You know, he's showing up at this and he's showing up that. Tom Cruise is like, it's like as if he doesn't live here. He's sort of
it almost wouldn't make a difference because he's not here anyway.
Yeah, it's like Schwarzenegger when he was a governor, I should say. He didn't hang out in Sacramento. He was down in Venice Beach. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't live there. Yeah. All right. So he could go to outer space and never come back. All right. Let me hit Liquid IV and then we'll play some Rotten Tomatoes game. Liquid IV. Dehydration occurs daily in 3 out of 4 people. I don't know if you knew that. It is getting hot and it is getting dry out there. And I'm doing a lot of sweating when I'm taking my walks. And that's why I shake up my Liquid IV. Fast, most effective way to stay hydrated, especially over the weekend, Dawson. If you're having a couple of cocktails, slug a Liquid IV down before you go to bed, man.
It works so good.
It makes the next day a lot better.
And if you forget it, you can still solve the problem by pounding it in the morning.
Yep. Each serving helps you get as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. I like the lemon flavor the best. I just put it in a bottle and then shake it up. And when I take Phil for a walk and I'm sweating it out there, that's what I use. 5 essential vitamins. More vitamin C than orange. As much potassium as a banana, which Drew will tell you is very important. No artificial colors or preservatives or flavors. Less sugar than an apple. Non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free. It's Liquid IV, right, Dawson?
Yeah, they also have one to help you sleep. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco and Target, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Adam at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code Adam at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code Adam.
All right, should we play a little Rotten Tomatoes game, Mexipana? Yeah.
Listen to that noise. It's a high falsetto voice. It can only mean one thing, and you can feel it. Dawson names are flicks, and the gang makes their picks. Guessing if it's rotten or fresh. If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus five. It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
Well, it's the middle of summer, and we still can't go to the goddamn beach. Well, strap on that Speedo and grab your towel. We're posting up with a beer and a joint, and you'll have to pry them from my sandy, suntanned hands. Rotten Tomatoes is going to the beach. First, cue the slow motion music as the most beautiful people on earth run toward the camera in red bathing suits. But maybe it's not quite how you remember. No Pamela Anderson or Hasselhoff in sight. Nope. It's The Rock and Zac Efron and Alexandra Daddario from 2017 Baywatch.
Wasn't this supposed to be like a send up of Baywatch?
Yeah, it was kind of like 21 Jump Street was to 21 Jump Street, you know, like sort of a comedy. It's a weird genre, but 21 Jump Street sort of got away with it, so why not? I just like in the actual series that Hasselhoff's son was named Hobie, as in Hobie Cat. He named his son after a catamaran. Like he loved.
He was so dedicated to the sea.
When I would watch like The Price is Right in 1979, like, we're giving away this Hobie Cat. It was like a catamaran. Like, they give away plastic Z-Brick, which is fake brick wallpaper, and then a Hobie Cat, and like a player piano. And people had to guess. How can you possibly guess on what a catamaran costs? All right. So I saw this movie on cable. It's like a bunch of good looking people running in slow motion and a bunch of jokes. And it did not do what it was, just really a bunch of people greased up with their shirts off looking good. It didn't accomplish what I guess 21 Jump Street did, which is like a sort of funny version of the series. But, you know, everyone is charismatic and it's kind of fun to watch. And for that reason, I give it a 41.
Oh, my. 17.
38.
We're out of the gate with five off. Baywatch is rotten at 17%.
Oh!
Mm. That is
nice.
Yeah, they hated this one.
Our next film is essentially a one-man show. It's a story of survival, isolation, and love between a man and his volleyball. Tom Hanks and Wilson star in 2000's Castaway.
Quietly, one of the most rewatchable movies.
Yeah, very rewatchable. Somehow movies, in a weird way, without so much dialogue, are easy to rewatch. Plus a great plane crash scene, because they just get right to it. It's like... Yeah. All right, so we all know this is good and great.
There's no reason this shouldn't be 100%. This is exactly what it's set off to accomplish. It tells the story perfectly, but it's going to be less than that, of course.
Yeah. So is it? You know, are we going to be angry at 84? Because it could be, and or is it 93? There's something. For some reason, in order to get to 95 and above, you need some struggle or some race relation or some sort of struggling. If he was on that island,
he struggles.
If he was on that, but if he was struggling with his sexuality, then it would be a 97.
He fell in love with a ball, for God's sake.
Just kind of survival stuff.
God knows what he had to do to survive.
I say it was great, but the critics gave it an 89.
Ooh, that's exactly what I said. I think it's up for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for it. It might be a little high. I said 95.
Castaway, certified fresh. at 88%.
Sick of this.
Brian's still in the negative zone.
Oh, that's right. At a negative four.
Right.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure our next movie is about surfing, but mostly it's about watching a piping hot Kate Bosworth say some dialogue in a bikini. I think it's about following your dreams. I don't know. Kate Bosworth and Michelle Rodriguez star in 2002's Blue Crush.
Yeah.
This movie sits 25 feet behind me on DVD. Christy loves this movie. I've never seen it.
It's a fun movie. It's not them riding the pipeline that's fake. It's them being maids at a Marriott that's fake. Like, if you open the door and these three chicks were standing there, like, we're here to clean your toilet, I'd be like, all right, let me get my pants off. I'll be in the shower. I'd go full Weinstein. I mean, their daytime jobs were maids at, like, the Honolulu Hyatt.
No, they're front desk material.
Yeah, they're for sure front desk material. So
Blue Crush, there has to be some sort of pun, too. It can't just be a wave thing. Is one of their names Blue?
No, it was just one of those. It was a fun movie to watch. And, you know, anytime anyone good looking does something underwater, it's always good. It's good. It's not a throwaway Dumbo kind of surf bikini chick movie. Like, there's a little bit of a beginning, a middle, and end. There's a point to be made. Christy probably saw it right at the right age to kind of go, oh yeah, identify with that. I say it's strong women competing in a man's world, and for that we give it a 71.
Wild guess, 68.
I said 65.
Blue Crush is fresh at 61%.
Oh, good. Needed that.
Wow. Just fresh.
Now, maybe it's not fair to dip our toes this far into the past, but why not toss in a challenge? We're blasting back in time to 1965 to watch Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello shake their booties to that wild new rock and roll boogie from 1965, Beach Blanket Bingo.
I was just talking about this movie, and I was also just talking about Back to the Beach with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello, if anyone was unfortunate enough to see that in the 80s. And Lori Loughlin.
Don Rickles and Buster Keaton?
Yeah, it's crazy.
The winner.
It's crazy.
Good heavens.
How these people would show up in these old... Again, I've been watching the shit out of Love Boat, and they have, like, Ginger Rogers and Ethel Merman and stuff, like Milton Berle. Like, they all pop up in these episodes because it's like they're old, their career's over, there's nothing to do, Love Boat's hip, and they want to be, their agent calls them. All right, I can't tell. I have no idea if this is like total schlock or they gave it. Okay, I'm behind big time, and also it was reviewed at the time. Has it been reviewed since? I have no idea. I'm off the pace. I got to go strong one direction or another. I'm going 26.
Yeah, that might be smart. I don't think these movies are very well beloved at this point. I took a shot in the dark and said 51.
I said barely fresh because who doesn't love the kitsch? 60.
Beach Blanket Bingo is... fresh at 73%.
Now,
there goes my dream of single digits.
What are the chances that the audience has it at 52? Yeah, I think Gina's right. I think they like the kitsch of it, but it only has 11 reviews, so that could have all been done in 1959 or something. All right,
We're going to end things with one of the most dramatic beach endings of all time. It's been a difficult journey infiltrating a group of surfing bank robbers who also enjoy skydiving, but it's all come down to this, the 50-year storm.
Yeah.
Vaya con Dios, Keanu Reeves and Swayze in 1991's Point Break.
Yeah, I followed them to the end of the earth.
This is tough because this is one of those right in the middle of, you know, when you should have seen it. I don't know if anyone else thinks this is a masterpiece. I'm not sure.
Well, it's got a lot of good going for it, and let's not forget what's-her-name directed it.
Catherine Bigelow.
Catherine what? Bigelow.
San Carlos' own that. Catherine Bigelow.
Wow.
Who's obviously very good. Was it Zero Dark 30 or was it Hurt Locker?
Yep. And no, she's both. About, she did right. Blue Steel right before this. Yeah. She's an accomplished director.
Right. So you can tell even the script's a little schlocky, but she's bringing it.
It's really
And it's
good.
Got a lot of good scenes in it. It's technically a good movie. Like, it's a good action. There's some stuff going on. It's interesting. This is tough because it is a good movie. It's not the kind of thing that the critics are going to give praise to, but it's got a female director and a female director of an action movie, which there wasn't a lot of that going on back then, and she did a very nice job.
And Lori Petty's pretty scrappy. She's not your typical leading lady.
Right. And you got
Tomboy.
I think you got Anthony Kiedis from Red Hot Chili Peppers in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it is just fresh at 63.
61.
66.
Maybe because of the female director, Point Break is fresh. It's 69.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm out.
I even saw the stage show.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and they hand you fake money in the when they rob the audience.
Gina Grad, congratulations. You made the podium with a score of 48.
Not too shabby.
Adam Carolla. Mm. Double dog balls. 88, my man, for third place.
Snowman.
Leaving us bald Brian, who at the very beginning had a chance to closely match his minus 16.
No.
Day that will live in infamy.
Never. Blew it. Never be beaten again.
Bald Brian pulls a Larry Bird. 33 for the win.
Wow.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah.
Fun game.
Yeah. It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. All the Beach Blanket Bingo reviews are all post 2002. All of them.
They're all contemporary.
If you want to know how the world works. All right, let's take ourselves. What was the movie? Was it Blood In, Blood Out? What was the Almost movie? The Edward James Almost.
American Me.
Oh, American Me. So I'm going to talk to him about it because when I was talking about Danny Trejo, I don't know if you guys know the story of that, but Edward James Almost made American Me, I don't know, Mexican mafia gangsters or whatever. And Trejo like told him, hey, you can't have these guys being gay or having gay sex or like doing any of this stuff. And he's like, why? It's a movie. I can do what I want. And they didn't like that. The mafia, the Mexican mafia.
They wouldn't tolerate that?
No. So he's been kind of on the run. And maybe there's been a guy or two killed who was involved with the movie. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They don't fuck around over there.
Yeah, the three consultants on the film were murdered shortly after the movie was out. And Danny Trejo says that he's aware of 10 people having being murdered for the involvement of the film.
Oofah.
Hey, can't judge. It's a wonderful culture.
Yeah, so supposedly Edward James Almost refuses to talk about the film publicly because there's a hit. Proof of extortion on him. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works. Like, hey, go ahead and draw a picture of Allah. Go ahead. Or Muhammad. Go draw a picture of Muhammad. Like, ah, no, I'm cool. Like, it's pretty effective when you want people to sort of stop doing stuff. You just kill them. And then they stop. That's pretty good. Works. It's effective. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So we do have a little bit more information on the Naya Rivera story. And I know we did hypothesizing, maybe, just what happened, why it happened. So we know that the 33-year-old former Glee star went missing 5 days ago while boating with her 4-year-old son at Lake Piru in California. The boy was found unharmed in a rented boat. Naya disappeared. And the Ventura County Sheriff, Bill Ayub, summarized Naya's final moments that featured saving the life of her four-year-old son, Josie. I'll give you a little information after, but here's a clip from the sheriff.
We know from speaking with her son that he and Naya swam in the lake together at some point during their journey. It was during that time that her son described being helped into the boat by Naya, who boosted him onto the deck from behind. He told investigators that he looked back and saw her disappear under the surface of the water. Naya's son was later found asleep on the boat, which was adrift in the northern portion of the lake known as the Narrows.
So the idea perhaps is that the boat started drifting. It was not anchored. They were, you know, playing around in the water. And at that point, she mustered all the energy to just sort of hoist him onto the boat, swim after the boat perhaps, and get him onto it, and just didn't have the energy left after that
Wow.
what I think they're hinting at.
I feel bad. I was thinking she may have committed suicide. Now instead she was saving her
like
kid.
It. Yeah. Yeah. It seems like they were just kind of jerking around in the water and being silly, and the boat wasn't anchored.
Well, I'm not, Mr. Safety First guy, but I guess you got to put that life preserver on if you're going to go out in the lake that way, because especially with your kid. And I don't know if the kid was wearing a life preserver or not, but for you too, because that thing will get away from you.
Yeah, her life preserver was on the boat. And as I mentioned the other day, I mean, they were using sonar, dogs, drones. And the reason why this was so difficult is because not only are lakes murky, and, you know, we talked about the bogs, but this particular lake, it's like they said during a drought, it has a lot of growth and a lot of trees and giant plants. And then the water rises again. And underneath that water is like its own forest. It's just, you can get tangled in anything. There's capsized trees. There's brush. It's like if you drained it, it would be a forest you couldn't walk through.
I was watching TMZ last night, trying to get caught up. And Orlando Bloom was out on his little motorized sort of he had like a little hydrofoil surfboard thing. And I'm curious about this, Max Zapata. It's a kind of Laird Hamilton kind of thing. But it's a miniature surfboard that's got a propeller on it and a hydrofoil, and you get up above the water and
I've seen this.
I saw it too. I was at Malibu a few weeks ago. I was like looking across the street and there's guys just kind of buzzing around on it. And I thought, I want to try one of those things. And the second thing I thought was that thing has to have a hell of a battery. And then the third thing I thought of was, how long can that go? Because the amount of energy it would take to get that propeller spinning, to get the speed up, to get that thing where the whole body pumping. Yeah, the whole body. And I think it has a propeller, but maybe it has a pump. But whatever the battery is, that's a huge draw. And then the next question is, Max Pat, is the guy operating it via remote? He's holding in his hand, which I guess he is. And is the battery pack on him or outside of the water somehow as well? And then what's retail? And Christmas is coming up. Write all those things down. Because I thought, I'm going to get on one of those things and buzz around with Orlando Bloom.
One or two that I've seen definitely have water pumping below. You know what I mean? Like spraying water out. It's almost to hoverboard.
Yeah, but it's not a propeller, is what you're saying.
Not as far as I can tell. But then again, I've only seen a couple of them, 100 feet away.
But it could be a propeller, right? Pushing the water?
Something's pushing it forward.
I think it makes sense that a propeller would be more economical in terms of battery burning instead of like a water jet, like on a ski boat or something like that.
But is it powerful enough to propel a 200-pound person, let's say, on top of just a board?
I think you got a better shot with a prop than you do with a jet, but I have no idea. So they got to be several thousand dollars. And they'll either have the propeller or they'll have the jet. But then the question is you must not be able to stay up for more than 6 minutes at a time or something like that. Like that battery's just got to go unless they make a plug-in version. But
how'd that work?
What is it, Maxipata?
I can't put up a picture or video of it, but I think what you're talking about is a 2020 Slingshot Hover Glide. That's what they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it has a propeller. It goes for about $1,800
uh-huh.
on the website.
$1,800 seems on the low end. And the batteries last how long?
The ones that you've seen, do they feel like, do they look, the ones I've seen look as though they're being pushed off the water a good 6 or 8 inches. Are those the ones that you're seeing?
Eight or 10 inches. They're, yeah, like a mini surfboard. They have the wing at the bottom. And once you get up off the water, then you're hydroplaning and then there's not a lot of drag. And then the kind of question is, and I think you're probably looking at a bargainy basement-y one. There's probably ones that are $8,000 or something.
Yeah, well, look, if you type, unfortunately, if you type Orlando Bloom and anything with a surfboard, there's a picture of him with Katy Perry and a surfboard in 2018, and that just flooding out.
Forget that. But the hydro board or whatever it is. But then, like, how long does it say you can go out and do it? Because you really feel like you're working the shit out of those batteries.
Yeah.
But anyway, interesting. Sorry.
You guys have seen the not the hoverboards like you're talking about, but like the jet packs that mm-hmm. they get really high in the air with the water just
yeah.
rushing down. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't even seen the hoverboard until now. Chuck Woolery, not a name you'd think would be in the news anymore, yet here we are. President Trump retweeted a post by game show host Chuck Woolery, of course, Love Connection, that basically...
Former game show host.
Yep. Basically claimed everyone's lying about the coronavirus pandemic in a possible effort to thwart Trump's reelection by harming the economy, according to CNBC. Woolery wrote in a Twitter post on Sunday evening, This is the post. The most outrageous lies are the ones about COVID-19. Everyone is lying. The CDC... media, Democrats, our doctors, not all but most, that we are told to trust. I think it's all about the election and keeping the economy from coming back, which is about the election. I'm sick of it. He didn't cite any details or which lies he was talking about, but the president did repost it. And there has been a little bit of backlash from four former directors of the CDC.
You mean two and two?
That's four.
Right back at you. They fired off a little bit of a verbal shot to Trump. They've co-offered a scathing op-ed in the Washington Post. They don't call Trump out by name, but here's part of it. They say public health experts face two opponents, COVID-19, but also political leaders and others attempting to undermine the CDC. Unfortunately, their sound science is being challenged with partisan pot shots, sowing confusion and mistrust at a time when the American people need leadership, expertise, and clarity. And all four served under Clinton, Bush, and Obama. So I don't think that's a partisan issue.
I think Chuck is a pretty wild right-wing guy and has been for a long time because he's had
I think it's in his Twitter bio that he's a Hollywood conservative.
He's had a few tweets. He's had some pretty crazy tweets out there. Speaking of crazy right-wing tweeters, Maxipata is – he does have a little correspondence going with James Woods.
What?
A little back and a little forth. So we're working on it.
Yeah.
It's not a guarantee, but there's a little rapport.
He is enthusiastic about coming on.
He's enthusiastic.
It will happen.
It will?
We don't have a set date, but based off of his language to me, he's really into coming on the show.
Oh, is this something new? Because I remember there's a little back and forth, like some good and some bad.
No, there's nothing new, but it's what I've told you. He's a big fan of you, Adam. And
yeah,
he would love to do it.
We're going to talk the specialist almost the whole time.
Working at the casino, man.
A little bit casino. Yeah. Does he know about Sonny?
I didn't catch that one, but I saw the specialist 185 times.
You're in that place.
Is he aware of Sonny and how he
I don't know. That specialist, I mean, it's funny because in that scene where he's in the Miami bomb squad precinct and he's giving everyone a speech on, you know, how the explosives work and how they're all rank amateurs and everything, it's a really corny scene that is way over the top. but you can still see his crazy acting chops in it.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's...
He's sticking his teeth into it.
It's a good scene.
It's a crazy...
We watched it.
It's a crazy fun scene. Well, if we find it, we'll watch it again. But Ziffy board. What is that one again? It's got a propeller. How long is the batteries on one of those, Max? Does it say, like, battery life? You must have a handheld remote, right? You must have something like that.
Yeah, I found the picture of Orlando Bloom. He is holding a remote. So,
but is it a TV remote?
Is either that or his keychain. I don't know.
So he's got a remote. It makes sense. You have to have a remote because you could be just kind of cruising along and kind of up. And then it's some... So here's... Knowing what I know about technology, you charge the battery, and you could probably buzz along just like you're on a surfboard, but on the ground, maybe on the water surface, for a half hour. But if you want to go full hydroplane, you have 6 minutes or something like that. So you'd hit it high, then you'd try to pop it up, and then you'd buzz around while the batteries were going down pretty quick. We shall... We shall see. All right, let's just listen. Just in the fantasy of me going over this scene frame by frame with James Woods when he comes on the show, who does not do publicity now or anything like that. But let's just listen. I love this goddamn scene. You guys got to watch the specialist.
Hey, sport. Where's the bomb squad? Hey, come on, boys and girls, come on. What are we doing here? Let's look alive, huh? What do you got?
We're looking into everyone at the party, doing a complete background check, okay? Give me the next one, all right?
I like when computers used to make noise. Enhance.
Enhance.
Tell you what, I'll handle the biographies. You go back to Trace and C4. Okay, Ace?
It's kind of dick.
He's a dick.
Chief says you're on this.
But he's the best.
But I don't take orders from any ex anything. All right, Ace?
And I got to tell you something. I mean, I'm sorry, but I thought your chief said that the fullest cooperation would be forthcoming. And I got to tell you something, sport. This doesn't feel like full cooperation to me. I mean, look at this shit here. What is this? This is, shouldn't this be in the lockup? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You guys are the experts. Maybe you don't need me. I mean, like, what is this? This is,
smell it.
This is Semtex. Am I right? Plastique. Plastic explosive. Am I right? I don't know. You're the expert. I mean, this little bit could blow up this whole area, and if this area goes, the whole building could go up. Am I right? Gosh, I don't know. I mean, maybe if I put this in here... What else do we have here? Oh, this is a plunger detonator, am I right? And that's a little mini receiver. You know, this looks like American circuitry to me, and I gotta tell you, call me a patriot, but American craftsmanship, it's the greatest in the world. See? Watch this. Here we go.
The greatest living actor.
Yep. Perfect fit. First time, every time. Screw it on, and one little twist, and voila, a perfect receiver bomb. Which, of course, is absolutely worthless without a transmitter.
Oh, yeah.
But hey.
He knows his way around that office. He's never
20 seconds
been in.
And we're hot. Okay? Okay. Now you deactivate it, you sanctimonious prick.
Okay, you cut that shit, Trent.
Oh, yeah? Huh? Come on. Come on.
Okay, you made your point, all right?
Have I? Huh? Huh?
Okay, that's enough.
What do you mean it's enough? You think I give a shit if this whole fucking block goes up? I don't. You mean you've had enough? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Enough is enough!
Huh?
I can't do it.
12.
What the hell are you? You crazy or something?
7 seconds
of the
life.
Craziest person you'll ever meet in your life. 6, 5, 4, 3.
Please!
Now here's a tip. You take care of the shit work. You leave the folks at the party to me. Okay? We on the same page here? Peace.
He's the world's greatest actor. Just from that scene alone. He must have been nominated just from that. Just on the strength of that one scene.
I think he is an Oscar-nominated actor. I have to look that for El Salvador. That God, I gotta look it up.
No, I'm pretty sure it's for Straight Talk with Dolly Parton.
Oh,
would you better ask him about?
And I think El Salvador was just called Salvador.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was Oliver Stone
nominated for two Oscars, according to IMDb.
It was a good movie.
Yep, Salvador and Ghost in Mississippi.
He's good. You know when when there's a movie where, like, Jim Belushi is good in it, and that was Salvador, and where Tom Arnold is good,
Lies.
True Lies. Like, when you go,
Right,
that's the point, is when they take guys that aren't really that good, and they're good in the movie, that means it's a good movie. All right, Gina, what else we got? Sorry.
Will you please ask about Straight Talk?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. All right. Then I'll do another story. So the Public Transportation Commission in Berlin has come up with an idea, a way to get people to wear masks on city trains and buses, according to Jalopnik. They're requiring masks, but banning deodorant. So they hope that their No Deodorant on Trains initiative will make people want to put their masks on because people be smelling so fresh.
Smart.
Yep. Their infection rates as a whole been pretty low during this pandemic, but Berlin is showing itself to be a new hot spot. So they're just coming up with creative ways to get those masks on people.
This is it's a goof though, right? Like
You do that advertising campaign, it gets eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
You know, let's stay in Germany. Everybody wants to get back to work. Everybody. That includes the sex workers in Hamburg. About 400 prostitutes held a protest on Saturday calling on the government to reopen brothels, which are legal in Germany. The Association of Sex Workers organized the protest, saying the continued closure of licensed brothels was forcing some prostitutes onto the street, illegal.
It's got to be a tough needle to thread, like if you're a politician and you're like, we've got to reopen these brothels. Oh, what about the schools? That can wait. I can wait.
Bigger fish to fry.
But what about churches? Hold, please, let's keep our eye on the prize, people. We're talking brothels now. We got to, like, you have to want to reopen brothels, but you have to be kind of casual about it. You can't.
Well, like you said, you can't be the guy with your first hand in the first guy with your hand in the air.
Right. Who wants to reopen the brothel? Whoop! Here we go.
Well, and that's the point, because they've allowed shops and restaurants and bars to reopen, and the ladies are like, what about us?
You know, what's weird about the brothels in terms of societies go, the most advanced societies have brothels, and then the least advanced societies have brothels, but the kind of in-betweeners don't have the brothels.
Rich man, poor man.
Yeah,
rich
it's kind of
a country.
It's like I feel like the in-betweeners are sort of like United States and Canada, and I don't feel like there's a lot of brothels. I mean, we have little versions of it. And then there's like, there's the Philippines and Germany. They have brothels. You know what I mean? Like, it's the in-between struggles with the brothel.
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
The for some civilizations, like, hey, it's a no-brainer. People want to fuck. They got money. Leave them alone. And then others are like so evolved. It's like, well, this is what we're evolved to. It's kind of the middle. The middle countries don't really, they're not really down with the brothels, right?
We'll leave it to the Netherlands mostly.
We'll get there. All right, let me hit Bet Online. Sports keep coming back. So is your chance to wager on them. Exclusive partner we have over at betonline.ag. UFC, NASCAR, Formula One. I was just watching Formula One the other night. They are back. Also need more soccer as well. If you need more, you can Bet Online has simulated NFL, Madden games, NBA, 2K, and UFC daily, plus future odds on everything you can imagine, season totals, division odds, and every league championship. Visit betonline.ag. Use the promo code podcast1 and pull out your mobile device and join. And if you use the code podcast1, you get a welcome bonus. So visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner, podcast1. Don't forget promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Gina Grad, let's do one more.
You got it. So let's do a little auction talk.
Hold on. Yes. We have more on Orlando Bloom and his electric surfboard.
Okay, so it is not electric.
What
these are called are hydrofoil boards.
That's like a Laird Hamilton thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah, Laird pioneered it, and it has a wing with fins that goes underneath the water, and it lifts you above the water. About like a foot. So it's actually just a different feeling than surfing because there's no friction or
So when you catch a wave or when you get the current going right. Oh.
Yeah, it takes the under part of the swell too. So it's...
Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have a remote in that particular case.
Right. It looks like he has one in his hand, but all the ones I'm seeing, or at least most of them,
sunglasses,
are not.
Maybe.
Those are sunglasses.
Electric, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And the electric ones... will kind of achieve the same thing if the water's calm or you're in a lake or there's something.
Yeah, some of the electric ones I'm seeing more used in a lake or wakeboarding or something like that.
And does it tell you how long you can buzz around before you got to recharge things?
With the electric ones I'm seeing, 45 minutes is a really good one.
Good long run.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. All right.
But yeah, the one Orlando was riding is not electric.
Katy Perry is super pregnant, yo.
That was the story they were covering.
I know. I was watching TMZ last night. All right, sorry. Where were we, Jimmy Grad?
Yeah, this isn't a Katy Perry story, but it is an auction story. Mm. Something that Brian may have a little more knowledge of than you. Sealed copy of the Super Mario Brothers game from 1985. It's for the original Nintendo system. It made it the most expensive video game ever sold. And I'm wondering if anyone would like to wager a guess.
May I see the game? Is there a picture of the game?
No, just guess.
Let me tell you let me tell you something that's sad. It's kind of 40-year-old virgin sad, but like I was looking on bring a trailer, like to look at car stuff in the mornings, see what's out there. And there's a BMW, I don't know, it was probably an 88 or an 89 BMW M3. It's an old car I used to have. It's a $40,000-$50,000 car. And this one's like over $100,000. Like, hey, what gives? It's like, it has 8,000 original miles on it. And there's like, this is a baseball card that's never been opened or touched by human hands. Or this is an action figure that's never been out of the package. Or this is a Star Wars figurine that's never been out of the package. It's a car that's never been driven. It's a video game that's never been played. It's an action figure that's been in a package its entire life. We're sending a dangerous message to young people, which is get the sports car, get the action figure, get the baseball card, get the video game. Don't touch it.
Don't use it.
Don't you use it. You want it to be worth something when you're dead, don't you?
I've always felt that way about jewelry because I'm not a huge jewelry person, but anyone who's like, oh, my good stuff's in the safe. I'm like, yeah, in the safe. And then you'll pass that safe key to somebody else and the jewelry will just sit in a drawer for the rest of all eternity.
Where are you guys with this? Because I have some thoughts on it because a version of it pertains to me, not as it pertains to jewelry. But where are you in the... I own this very expensive jeweled necklace it's worth $10 million. I don't want to go out to the opera house in it. It could be snatched in the parking structure. I had a replica made of it that's exactly the same. I'm going to wear the replica. Now, I'll give you a clue. My way of thinking is like, if you have the actual version of it in your vault at home, and you've made a recreation of it, I somehow look at wearing that as different than if you didn't own the actual version of it. Thoughts?
Yeah, same thing with purses.
Yeah, Christy got a fake wedding ring when we went to Italy, I guess, 11 years ago. She didn't want to walk around. We did so much walking to gypsies and whatever. She didn't want to have the hassle.
Fine, please.
Losing it, stealing it, whatever.
Was it a recreation of the original?
No. No, it was off the rack from Macy's, $18 or something like that.
I'll give you...
It was close enough, but it wasn't. No, it was not designed to be a replica.
I have the real first Apple-sponsored Porsche 935, as you guys know. If you can find a picture of that CarMax bed, I love that picture, and I love it, but it's not painted like Apple, and it's not done like Apple, and it doesn't have anything... like Apple. It's painted like Hawaiian Tropic because the car changed liveries over the years, and I have it in the original livery, which is the Hawaiian Tropic livery that Paul Newman raced it at Le Mans. So he raced it in 79, and then in 80, it turned into an Apple car. And a lot of the Apple nerds are like, you should put it in the Apple paint, which is what you guys are looking at now. Now, my red Porsche that's at the other shop, that's the car.
Obviously, I would imagine cars, you correct me if I'm wrong, I imagine cars don't suffer the same fate that Star Wars toys do, where you can't use them. Like, they're meant to be driven, right?
No, but this is, I'm pardon the pun, I'm shifting gears here, which is I am building a tribute clone car of the Apple liveried car, which I would normally look at as kind of like, eh, why do you want to do that? But I own the actual car, and I'm building a tribute to it based on owning the actual car, which for some reason I've rationalized it now makes sense. Now I can do that because I have the actual car. It looks
so, that's
so,
FME money.
It looks good in the Apple, boy. Show the Apple one more time. It's such a,
and it's more inclusive looking.
That's right. It's more inclusive looking in the Apple livery. All right.
Well, it's funny that I have to answer that question of the copy of the jewelry. That is so funny to me because my entire life, and I'm not doing it, I wear my grandmother's wedding ring, but my entire life, my mom, who knows me so well, I lose everything. I'm flighty, and especially as a kid, I was just a fucking mess. She'd always go, well, when you get engaged, we're going to go right out and make a copy of that ring, and that's what you're going to wear because you're going to lose it. And I have that ingrained in my head for decades. And I think about it with this one, too. I worry this is still an heirloom. So I always hear my mom going, you better make a copy and wear that. You're going to lose it.
Well, it seems very bizarre and human. On the other hand, it's also crazily pragmatic, I guess. Yeah. And yeah, I would. I'd make a copy of that one and put the other one in a safe deposit box or something. Yeah. And then there's also that part where you hand it down to your girl or whenever, what have you. Anyways, yeah, look, so we're gonna die.
Would you venture to guess? Thank you. Would you venture to guess as we wrap it up what this A plus condition sealed 1985 Super Mario Brothers game sold for at auction?
I have no idea, but because we're talking about it, it has to be something nuts. So I'm going to say $86,000.
I'll go a little lower,
$55,000. $114,000.
What the hell?
Nerds, man.
I'm telling you, the nerds have money and they're willing to spend. The one theme that we have with all these auction things is, you know, racing helmets and things like that are all cool. But the nerd items, the gamer items, Star Wars items, those always go big. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Last but not least, Geico. They're offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV insurance. That's right, 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you if you're hip enough to be with Geico. So hook up with Geico, get the 15% off, and get the savings you'd normally get if you're with Geico anyway, because it'd save you straight away anyway. Get the extra 15% when you switch over by October 7th. That's Geico. Visit geico.com. All right. Ed Calderon is going to come in here. He's an expert in security and all things Mexico. He's going to tell us all about that massacre that took place at the rehab center and all what's going on south of the border when he comes in a second. I will bid adieu to Gina Grad and Bald Brian and Ed Calderon coming in next.